Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. In the news, AEW Grand Slam downsizes in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, hot takes on Survivor Series, and ice cold takes on Full Gear and for Vader Club, Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard, I Quit from Starrcade 1985. We are recording moments after Survivor Series ends. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And they got me on the end, Chris. I thought for sure, when CM Punk walked through the back without anybody, he'd come flying back out, and then The Rock was going to come out and basically stare down the bloodline. WWE has kind of taught me to watch till the end because it felt like something was coming, and then nothing came.
I was waiting for Roman to turn on everyone, so that was interesting.
Okay.
I thought Punk,
they were kind of teasing Punk, you know, sneaking behind Roman there, and I'm looking at that. I'm going, okay, maybe he's going to kick him in the head or something.
There was one moment where it looked like Roman was about to spear all four of them, or like could have bounced off the ropes and came back and just speared all four.
Yeah, it was very odd, the pacing. It was almost like they were baiting you to say something's coming, and then they just said, nah, screw you.
Start with this? Where does this leave Solo Sikoa and the Neo Bloodline, minus Jacob Fatu, who is not going to be back in action for a minute with what appears to be some sort of quad or knee-based injury?
Do you think that was legit?
I think that was legit.
Okay, because I thought Tongaloa had ripped up his knee on that spot where he was hanging by the rope, but I was watching Jacob, and I thought he grabbed the wrong leg when he went up to limp.
He got no vert.
Okay.
On that corkscrew.
That's going to suck because I think he's had knee surgery on that knee before.
Yeah, I mean, if that's a work, it's a really good work, but it looked like he just was trying to push off, didn't get something, went not good, and he kind of flopped down and to the side and then rolled himself out the ring. Bronson Reed was over there and checking on him.
Okay, well, I'll say this then. Take him off TV for a while, and then give me Bron Breakker versus Jacob Fatu, because that is the one match now that is in my wheel that I just want to see them go full speed and just break each other's sternum for a bunch of like cross body blocks and stuff, because Braun and Jacob Fatu both have that weird big dude who can go flying around energy that I love that kind of stuff. And overall, this pay-per-view was I put in a B- area. There was nothing superb other than, for me, I liked the triple threat a lot, but I mean, it was cromulent, but there was nothing that rose above that for me. What about for you?
That's exactly how I felt, too. It wasn't so good as it was long. And for me, the War Games format is a tough one because the first 20 minutes of this match just don't really matter if there's not good story happening or good
violence.
Development. Yeah, good violence. Or good seeds being planted for future stuff. And I didn't feel like either of these matches were particularly good in terms of seeds planted.
I agree. I agree. It was one of those things where it hit the notes on both that you expected. You expected Io and Tiffany to do something off the top of the cage, and both of them are just insane. Especially Io, who just does it with a smile on her face every time I think she's killed herself with that trash can spot. You know, Stratton, you know, is going to be solid and go up and do things. In the men's, they hit the story beats of, oh, look, there's dissension. And this melodrama is to be expected in WWE-style matches, but they really need to shrink the rings back to like WCW NWA size, put the roof on the thing and cut it out with the weapons. Cause all of that is kind of ruining the flow of this match.
Dude, you can't do 20 minutes of weapons. That's the big problem for me, is it's like the weapons come out by the 7 minute mark in both of these matches. And then it's just a plunder match.
It kills the flow. It kills the flow as people look, the whole teams in cages thing, come down to the ring, look under the ring while their partners are being beat up, and what it ruins the energy of the match for me. I think, look, if they're going to bring something back and I can't get my top on the cage back from old school, have both teams down by the cages, have two doors, one for the heels, one for baby faces, and make it and tighten that up, you know, condense the space there where you have all these people in one general area. And really make it seem like it's a fight to the death type of thing. The women's war games especially just felt, and look, Candice LeRae finally getting some flowers and doing solid work. Bayley did solid work, and again, Io and Tiffany were solid, but this was low energy for me from the first step. Like, why Nia Jax is in there if you're not gonna have the story that Nia Jax has worn herself out and Tiffany could lose the war games, but pin Nia Jax. And that was the thing that I'm thinking a couple minutes later, it came to me. The war games story should have been Tiffany actually cashed in and then Liv and Nia kick out of that spot. And the rest of the match is, will Tiffany go for the loss for her team so she can win the title? That's what it should have been. And that would have been interesting. Instead, we got, look, Bayley,
that would have been novel, yeah. Or to have a War Games match also happening in the confines of a women's title match.
Yes.
Like, essentially, that would have been great. That would have been this iconic moment of all these referees looking at each other going, can this happen? And
baby, you know, faces just trying to break up pins that they don't know if they should be breaking up,
right,
you know, that
right,
kind of thing.
Man, just to inject pure bedlam, and of course you could just get out of this cleanly, but to have a good 10 minutes of absolute bedlam would have injected some novelty into what was a kind of, you know, by-the-numbers match.
By-the-numbers is perfect. Go on. I'm sorry.
And I really love your whole idea of Nia. Like, if you're going to start with Nia as the lead dog in this match, the first 15 minutes should be Nia getting the better of everybody. And then as we get closer to the 20-minute mark, we start to see that she's getting gassed. And that's when the wheels start turning in Tiff's head.
Yeah, but, you know, you tell that story, and it gets much more interesting as the War Games goes on. As it was, to me, if you're doing like in a WCW NWA style War Games, this would have been Bayley and Candice for 5 minutes of a pretty good wrestling match slash fight type thing. But yeah, Nia going the whole way, you got to tell the story about her cardio. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just
No. It's the classic heavyweight prize fighter who is at, like a Mike Tyson, who is dominant in the first 5 to 6 rounds, but is never training to go the distance. And this premise, like, essentially have Nia sort of get too big for her own britches, say that she's going to go the distance and discover that she can't. She, you know, she, once she's in there against, you know, 5 of the best people in the division, she gets tired, like, which is not surprising. You know, like, you can even have her get the better of Bianca, get the better of a number of these people. Yeah.
Some news for you. Jade Cargill was taken out of this match on Monday. There's a divergence in what happened here. So it'll be interesting to watch. Some people are saying it's covering for a legit injury. Some are saying it's covering for some political turmoil within the Jade Cargill camp. So keep an eye on the tag titles.
When we say political turmoil, what are we insinuating?
We're insinuating that this might have been disciplinary.
Oh, okay.
I believe this is Meltzer talking about it. So,
like, what we should be getting disciplined for?
Oh, possibly saying I don't want to do the job somewhere. Possibly saying, you know, I don't know. You know WWE and their weird things sometimes. I mean, Vince isn't there anymore, but they're still weird. Maybe not liking booking. Maybe wanting more of a push. Maybe asking for the tag team to be broken up when it's not time. It could be anything, Chris. I don't know anything.
And in fairness, her experience in the business after the Goldberg-like push in AEW has probably set some unrealistic expectations about what her presentation should be on a bigger stage.
It could be she's carrying herself like a star.
Yes.
You remember those notes?
No, but like in that Goldberg-y sort of way of like, I am, you know, I'm big time here. You know, I should be presented like I was in AEW where I was completely dominant.
Other matches of note, Damian Priest lost in a pretty good match, although you knew the Finn Balor stuff was coming. And
right.
I still didn't want to see it.
They set the table too early for that when Priest was coming down to the ring and Cole was talking about it. I was like, well, that's where this is going.
Yeah, they absolutely tipped the cards. Again, the match, LA Knight versus Nakamura. Nakamura wins the United States Championship. I always get those two mixed up. Nakamura came back a little bit hardcore last night on SmackDown. I kind of dig it. He's doing the Black Mist thing. It's kind of
like his new theme. It's nice.
It's very nice, and looks like he's going to get a. I mean, they left the door open for an LA Knight title rematch because of the bump on the metal in between the ropes. But LA Knight to me, perfectly good with the promos and stuff, but once the bell rings, just kind of there, man.
It's just not there. I that's the problem with LA Knight. He is a warm body in the ring once the bell rings. And also, as far as the character goes, it's a bit of a one-note song.
Yeah.
I think we have tried to get this guy integrated with the big stuff, and they tried this with the Bloodline. They tried to kind of have him in the mix with Roman Reigns and all that stuff, and the character's a bit weak and one-dimensional when you actually have to start building stories around it. It doesn't really show ass. It's not really made to kick a ton of ass either. LA Knight sort of lands in this Jericho babyface, not like AEW Jericho, but like kind of classic Jericho, where he's cool, he's fun, he's funny, but less so than Jericho was in kind of his classic iterations. But I don't know if that's a main event thing.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, he has the look, he has the gift of gab, but that gift of gab is just to get to his catchphrase.
Yeah.
And he's not really allowed to cross that line where you're almost burying a guy type of a thing, which is kind of probably what he needs. He needs to be able to dress down someone.
You're totally right. I remember very distinctly the Logan Paul interaction where he got dressed down by Logan Paul and LA Knight was not able to come back and break the fourth wall, more or less, which was dumb, especially because it seemed, WWE cut ties with this guy pretty quickly too. Shortly thereafter, once the lawsuit stuff started to flare up, they got the belt off of him and they memory hold Logan Paul. We speak not of him. They should have had LA Knight.
Really?
Yeah. His prime
is all over the TV show. So
the prime deal's still there.
Okay.
But he's not. And I don't think that's an accident, man.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was he was going to take some time off and come back fresh probably for the Rumble, but I think they
made him take some time off as that lawsuit stuff heated up.
Could be. I'm forgetting the lawsuit, so
I have to look it up too, but there was a lawsuit that his lawsuit around maybe it was Prime or something. It was, you can look this up as I'm vamping on this, but
no,
he had a lot, or not, but
I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Whatever. So, anyways, when Logan Paul lost the belt to LA Knight, it was around or about the time that he started having some like issues in the courts.
A $68 million lawsuit for, but it's Prime Sports being sued.
Yeah, it still involves Logan Paul.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just.
No. The timing was coincidental at bare minimum.
And then the match for me that was the creme de la creme of this pay-per-view was the triple threat for the Intercontinental title. They continue to tell the story of Sheamus can't win this title, so I assume he's winning it at Mania.
Mania, yeah.
But after Monday, I thought for certain Bron Breakker's sternum was broken after that run around and then just spearing right in the corner of the table. Him, Ludwig is coming into his own. He really is. And he held his own in this match. He wasn't just the third guy that was in there. And of course,
he's like somewhere between a Cesaro and a Dean Malenko. I really enjoy him.
Oh, he talks much better than Dean Malenko.
No, I'm saying as an in-ring style.
As an in-ring guy? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to give him a new fresh look a la Shinsuke and have him kind of break off from Gunther and do his own thing and see what happens there. I mean, there's still a money act together, but I think it might be time to kind of think of a new story for Kaiser so they can become a single star. But that entire match was phenomenal. Again, Bron Breakker just continues to be that kind of guy, like his old man and his uncle, that you just can't help but admire how tough they are, but also just how agile they are for guys that big. And yes. I mean, this is young Steiners that I'm comparing it to, not Big Papa Pump Steiner, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, he's just fantastic. Any other thoughts on this before we go in the news?
On the show? No, I mean, I think it was a bit of a letdown, but this is also that time of year where WWE kind of coasts into the Rumble. So these 6 to 8 weeks tend to be a bit slower and a little less inspired.
I laugh at that because I was thinking about this today. I was like, yeah, they're going to do War Games, and then, you know, they'll coast a little bit. Meanwhile, AEW is over here giving us 30 different tournaments that we don't really care about.
No, you know, okay, just since you picked that up, real quick rant on that, right? If you are going to do the Death Riders and Dean Ambrose are redefining and redesigning AEW in their own image, I think the move here with this Continental Classic that no one was clamoring for in the first place and I didn't even realize was coming until it was on my screen this week would be to act like you're starting the Continental Classic and have the Death Riders completely demolish it for the entirety of the episode. Oh. Not allow the Continental Classic to even happen.
Yes, and that goes directly against everything that they want with the Continental Classic, which is, oh, we want our pure work rate G1 tournament, screw you, Toru Yano type of thing that Tony wants. But yeah, I agree. We'll talk more about this when we get to the Lazy River. Let's get some headlines out of the way.
Yes.
And get into it. AEW Grand Slam Australia moving from Brisbane's 52,500 seat Suncor Stadium to a 13,500 Brisbane Entertainment Center. Initial ticket sales were quote unquote encouraging, but then they slowed to the point where on November 26, AEW's local ticketing partner informed folks who'd purchased tickets to Grand Slam Australia that the Saturday, February 15th show is moving to Brisbane Entertainment Center. I had not checked out because I know nothing about Australia, but apparently it is about the size of the United States if you put one on top of the other, at least the continental United States. Oh. Brisbane is on the other side of the continent from your more popular venues such as Perth and Sydney.
So it's like moving it from New York to California.
That would be, well, but I mean, if they moved it from Brisbane to there, but I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's on the other side. It's like, and I guess the Australia market isn't that hot. I just feel like this was a bad move all the way around. I think they listen to people who go, yeah, you can run stadium shows in other continents because wrestling never comes there, so it'll be the hottest ticket in town. And everybody's like, I'm not flying cross-continent over to Brisbane to watch AEW. Any thoughts on this?
Right. I think the whole notion of wrestling never comes to this country, ipso facto, all of the citizens of this country are going to upend what they are doing to go and catch the wrestling show.
Right.
Really only tracks in England occasionally after a long drought, because England is a very passionate country, or the United Kingdom is very passionate about wrestling, and the United Kingdom is smaller and more interconnected and easier to get around than a lot of other countries that might be in this conversation, like the United States and Mexico and Australia. These are large land masses that traversing is not just an academic thing.
WWE revealed on Monday that there will also, in addition to a United States women's title, a women's intercontinental title. I think there should be a mid-card women's title, but I think there should be a mid-card women's title. I don't think we need two. Listening to Dave Meltzer analyze this, there's exactly one title for approximately six competitors in both rosters, which is when you take out like the main eventers and whatnots and the tag title things. I don't want this to become an AEW too many title situation, but
sure.
But it's one of those things where if we're going to build a mid card, I think we should have built the mid card and then gotten to the title. I like a lot of the women who don't have belts, and this will give them an opportunity. I just want them to mean something, I think, is my only fear.
Yeah, no, I get that as well. I think there's an opportunity for the United States and Intercontinental ones to be on NXT more. And there are a lot of very talented women on NXT right now. Perhaps it would be interesting to have one of them bring home a main roster title and be defending it on NXT.
So you'd put a third women's title in NXT?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
You know who would be good for that?
It's not just locked in NXT.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like the tag titles, like it used to be. Yeah.
Right. Like that person can migrate up again.
No, I think that would be interesting, especially for someone who's kind of bouncing back in like the what's it called? The two-way deal in the NBA. Yeah. Someone like a Lash Legend in Metaphor.
I would actually do Lola Vice. At this point, she needs to be kind of doing something more, and they've kind of ran the whole circuit with her. Having her be sort of a mid-card champion on both shows, I think, would at least give her something to do.
AEW pulled Ricky Starks from his scheduled GCW shows. We kind of alluded to this to the clip of him showing up for GCW in the shopping mall last week. Well, since then, Ricky Starks has done a podcast with Chris Van Vliet where he said some things about being caught on camera during the Rumble last year, but that wasn't what got him pulled. What it was Effie going on a podcast complaining about AEW booking Hammerstein for three nights, but also made this comment that Tony Khan's father pays him to stay away from the sports teams.
The other comment is we can't go around losing $40 million a year. What was his thing about the budget? But he really slapped Khan in the face.
Yes.
About running a losing organization, one that is not fiscally solvent, which for any businessman's basically like, you know, about as rough of an uppercut as you could take on the chin. You're just running, you know, a toy, more or less.
People wanted petty, Chris. They're going to get petty. Starks is so weird because, I mean, he was talking about, I mean, he was kind of burying. I thought he'd get pulled for burying the stuff with Big Bill and just his general kind of, I don't know, defiance. But, yeah, the Effie stuff didn't help either. And you're just like, so is he going to sit and wait for his contract to disappear or to run out, and then he can go to WWE and do whatever he's going to do, because he's been made offers for programs that he doesn't want to do. It's so odd to me that his appearance at GCW makes so much news, and then it's like, nope, no more of that.
Yes, right. And this is a guy who's just been very star-crossed. You know, you could call him Ricky star-crossed. No, I did it. I just did it.
Yeah, I mean, he's in his late 30s. There needs to be a star run soon, I think. And I guess he's going to hitch his wagon to hopefully showing what he can do over on the other team. I guess.
He needs to get to WWE. I think he could do what LA Knight didn't, if he could come in and find the right gimmick.
The Hardys announced that they had re-signed with TNA. They were on some short-term contracts. Hey, how about that?
Thank heavens for that. I cannot wait to see Jeff Hardy absolutely accordion a man coming off of the top ropes, dropping the entirety of his appreciating body frame onto that man.
And to end the news, Sean Ross Sapp spoke with several people at AEW, confirmed that Adam Copeland has been cleared to resume training. I'm here for that. I like Adam Copeland in AEW, just so long as he doesn't jump from the top rope or top of a cage all the way down with his 49, 50-year-old knees. But yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Adam Copeland.
I like him too. I've been baffled by his approach to late phase wrestling up to now, where he's like trying to wind the clock back to 38 to get back those lost 8 or 9 years. And like, it can't be that way. You have to come in and adjust your style. I hope this time around he's more, you know, not necessarily methodical and necessarily heel, but at least more ground-based and trying some things that are a little bit safer for him.
That'll do it for the news. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. I have watched a lot of wrestling this week, it appears, because we went to air before Full Gear started. So we have some ice-cold thoughts on that. Did you get a chance to watch any of this?
I did watch some of it. It's fuzzy wuzzers at this point. Among other things I've done this week is I rebuilt and restored a guitar from the 1960s. So, like, that happened between Full Gear and now.
I had three takeaways. Number one, Mercedes and Chris Statlander had a great match, and it was finally about time for Mercedes to have that kind of match in AEW. I was very happy, although them now plugging this as the longest women's match in AEW history gives me some pause. Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay was, as you'd expect, pretty great. I don't know about Ospreay losing as much as he does, but we'll talk a little bit about that, because I have a theory about AEW that I want to bring up to you. And then for me, actually, one of the best things on this show was on the Zero Hour. I thought that Big Boom AJ versus QT Marshall stuff was pro wrestling in its purest lighthearted form. He was over as a baby face. He got his stuff done. He did it with a broken foot, by the way.
Did he have a broken foot?
Yes. He said he had a broken foot before that happened during training or happened during the match, but he completed it. But everybody
then good for him. Because, I mean, I thought it was a very, very by-the-numbers thing. But for a guy who yeah. doesn't do it that much and is doing it on a broken foot, I thought, you know, it's fine. I hate them, but it's okay.
I don't care for them personally. I find what they do to be banal, if it's a word. I find it to be unhealthy to have people eat this much crap for our
right.
For our enjoyment.
Okay, like yes, I think that's the thing that really bothers me at the core of it. Is there's like a little bit of like obesity humor or obesity shock that is sort of latent to this whole Costco guys thing, right down to the Rizzler's gimmick being, I don't have a chin, but allow me to outline where it would be if I had one. There's just stuff about the Costco guys thing that makes me feel uneasy, like watching Eric Cartman or something.
I think the Rizzler got more over than Ricochet and Takeshita in the beginning of their match, though, which just goes to show you that it's like...
Jeff, I'm starting to think that the fans want more than just great wrestling.
Well, okay, if you allow me to take another shot on this lazy river then. Because I was thinking, for some reason, while on a treadmill, because when I go to my mom's house in Scottsdale, I spend a lot of time at the gym because I want to be out of the house. So I was thinking about this, and I listen to a lot of podcasts on wrestling, and they're all doing their whole thing, well, what's wrong with AEW type of things? And they're getting around to the points that we've gotten to, but I have another one, and it comes off of a former point I had. And it's this. We said before that there was when we criticized it, that there was an emotional disconnect between the performers and the material. Who loves the AEW fans? Because in my estimation, there's also a problem with an emotional disconnect between the baby faces and the AEW audience. We know that the AEW wrestlers love AEW as a company, as corporate fealty, but who is the Dusty Rhodes / Magnum TA saying, I do this for the fans, you know, reach out to your television, give me your energy kind of a thing, you know, where it's like, they have the respect of the fans because it's the both these guys, you know, this match rules type thing, but there's not a lot of, and even the company itself has cut back on its outreach stuff. Like, you used to have meet and greets before every big pay-per-view, and they've absolutely stopped all that. It's almost as if you're the fans of us, you're paying to be here, now clap, you trained seals type of a promotion almost.
And this gets to the problem with the Death Riders' supposed storyline here, which is that Moxley's taking over, somebody must save this company. And also, these people come out every week and say that they care about AEW, and nominally, you know, they care about AEW, the company. To your point, it's not about the fans. They're not like the Death Riders are taking away something from you, the fan base of AEW. And no one believes that who is watching the Death Riders right now. You know, no one believes that they are getting, no one feels aggrieved. At least when you watched the NWO back in WCW, like 96, it felt like the NWO was taking away from you the WCW first hour that you kind of wanted to see. And right now, the Death Riders aren't taking away anything, which goes back to my point earlier in the show about the Death Riders needing to take away the Continental Classic, needing to destabilize the show. If indeed the fans really do love the 30 minutes of pure wrestling G1 format that AEW brings to them every year, this time of year going into the holiday season, then the Death Riders taking that away and saying, this is ninny stuff, all this prestige stuff is crap, it's just about who's strongest, would be a really interesting foil in contrast to all of that.
Well, the way that the NWO got to that point was the first thing that they did in that storyline was they took out the Horsemen, which was the epitome of WCW fandom. And then eventually they got to the Stings and the Lugers and stuff, but they started with the Horsemen, which always represented that company. On these podcasts, it's like, you heard, it's like, wow, the past 3 weeks, they've had some really bad crowds, but they've had really good wrestling. It's like, I don't know. Again, I never went to live wrestling shows. Like, I wanted good matches. I mean, if they were pay-per-views and they were blow-offs, but I'm talking house shows or TV tapings. If I went to those, I was there to see, I wanted to be there the night that something historic happened or something memorable happened, or there was an angle there that I could say, yeah, I was there that night where, you know, the Midnight Express broke somebody's arm or something like that. I didn't go in thinking, wow, tonight's the night I'm going to get a nice 60-minute Broadway between two technically proficient. I wanted to see a fight. I wanted, and maybe that's just old school me being too old, but it's like one of those things where it's like, okay, you're getting a perfectly technical.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Thing between Claudio Castagnoli and Ricochet, and you're chanting both these balls, and both guys are bald and stuff like that. But it's not anything that you haven't seen in like a WWE mid-card SmackDown feud. So why should they be cheering more and more, even though it's a technically proficient, well-worked match?
I mean, or where is the flowers for Carmelo Hayes and Andrade as they have their umpteenth work rate match over in WWE, and people saying the talking points being, well, these guys should be elevated more because this is what the fans want. Problem is the fans, that's not what they want right now.
Melo had a really good match against Cody Rhodes that was taped for last night. That was something that might elevate him eventually because Cody might bring it up in a promo, and that'll elevate him. But yeah, and the other thing, my other takeaway from Full Gear, why is Adam Page anywhere near this world title? After losing his match, this morass of a ending angle with
Why
Jay
would he
White.
make, yeah, why would he make sense as like the saving grace against the Death Riders either, you know?
I made a deal with Christian Cage and he blew it. It's like you should be nowhere near this. And oddly enough, if the rumor is true that they're working on a four-way for World's End, Christian Cage should be nowhere near this. He has a world title shot if he wants it at any time that he can just. It made no freaking sense for Adam Page to be the guy to stand up to Moxley here after losing earlier in the night. It was just one of those things where I just go, huh, this is way too busy, and this is all in Tony's head that this all makes sense somehow.
Sense, right? Yes, there are things that have not happened on screen but have happened inside of Tony Khan's brain that are important scenes we have not seen.
Which is an
But if
important distinction against, like, say, the War Games, which, while not good, hit story beats and were very obvious what the story beats were.
right.
If I could get a happy medium, I'd be great.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to be razzle dazzle, but like, yeah, like I don't understand why the Death Riders do what they do and why Cesaro or Claudio does what he does. Or importantly here, it would seem, why Yuta is doing what he's doing, and then what the hell Marina is even doing there. I don't care even why she's doing it. I'm just wondering what's her point? Why does she exist?
Right. Your turn, sir.
Man, all right. Let's go to NXT. I think at long last, it is time to. I said this wrong pre-show. I'm going to say it right now. It is time to put a belt on Tatum Paxley. She didn't have a great character, but she's really talented. And while I think Fallon Henley is very good, and I think she is very talented as well, and certainly seems to be really kind of morphing into her own, I don't think she's getting helped by having JC Jayne and Jasmine Nix be, you know, the MacGuffin in every single match for her to get to victory. And I think Tatum Paxley is now stuck on this like Lola Vice track of people we have beaten way too many times in developmental who need to just get a win.
Or need a gimmick refresh.
Yeah.
I think the problem with her is purely gimmick. 'Cause I mean the little child thing, maybe this program with Gigi Dolin
Might
who
help.
returned might help.
Yeah.
Might
Yeah.
help. Maybe if she can bring my fear is that Tatum's going to bring Gigi into her world as opposed to Gigi bringing Tatum into hers. And then that would be death. I mostly agree with you. I think I think there's a chance she gets the next turn with this North American title, which will be fine. I mean, she's on the upper echelon of that tier. So, and that's what they're here for. And I think Fallon should be on the bottom of the main event tier with the Julias and whatnot. I think she's that good. I'm gonna bring up one thing in NXT. Has Ridge Holland found the spark? Has he put it together? Because he, in terms of his facials and his tone and his promo, which was short and to the point, I actually kind of enjoy Ridge Holland's work. I'm not saying he's great by any means, but it's like, but compared to what he was like in NXT UK, which was just a big dude with a blackjack and, a pretty good theme song, and he was always just kind of sullen and stuff like that. The personality fairy has kind of come down on him a little bit. And he's kind of, I mean, he's not Trick Williams yet, don't get me wrong, but he's at least somewhat interesting now. Agree or disagree?
I Ridge more interesting? Yeah, somewhat. Trick and Ridge just seems to be a bit of a vacuum, and then
Yes.
inserting Eric Bischoff here to bring controversy. I mean, it feels very desperate, right? Like you have to add Eric Bischoff because these guys really can't do it on their own, that sort of thing.
And just to put the button on this, Brian Alvarez had the best idea for Andre Chase that I've heard, and that is the return of Bodie Hayward to open up this new Chase Tech or Chase A&M or Chase whatever it is, and to be heels. I'm here for the return of Bodie Hayward as it if he's not going to take over the No Quarter Catch Crew and make it like Chase Technical Wrestling University, which would also be fine with me. But the rest of NXT for me was okay. Ava, and Eddie Thorpe,
where Eddie Thorpe is becoming very dark, very, very fast.
yes, and
Like,
but he's
don't
also not at
touch me,
fault.
Eddie.
He's not at
No,
fault.
he shouldn't have grabbed Ava. That
He
was
should
weird.
no, he
No,
shouldn't have
that was
grabbed
weird.
he sh
That was
shouldn't have
weird.
grabbed Ava. I'll agree with that. But Ava's sitting there lying to him. I've given you everything you wanted. No, you haven't. You've given him nothing that you wanted. And meanwhile, you have all these tag teams that are in disarray because you won't put your foot down over any decision that you've made, etc.
And then she gets cleared out by someone else,
And Thorpe
and
gets the blame.
but Eddie Thorpe is all over the place.
It's a bad character too. I just
It's a
can't
ba
stand it.
No, it was bad before and it's bad now.
Stop being an emo bitch and be a
Right.
man. That's all I want out of Eddie Thorpe.
You know what, and what the issue is it's like it's almost as though if you were going to really run this story, Eddie Thorpe was popular with the ladies and Ashanti the Adonis wasn't, and then all of a sudden fortunes turned and that drove Eddie Thorpe insane. And now like he has problems with women and doesn't understand boundaries and is weird.
Like, don't get me wrong, I liked the HBK Eddie Thorpe tete-a-tete there after he grabbed her because HBK was totally in the right. But you're giving Eddie Thorpe a villain origin story where he was been wronged. And I don't need villains
Right.
who were wronged. I mean, KO is doing it fantastic on the main roster. You don't need a second one because it's going to be terrible in. You people, you turned on me. No, just make him a bad guy or make him a good guy, but don't do this villain with a point stuff, please.
And then we are starting to see the turns of Kalani Jordan here. It's happening.
You must
But
be so excited.
I'm tickled pink. I actually do enjoy her matches. She's very crisp with her offense, and that's gotten appreciably better since we first saw her debut several months ago.
It wasn't a gymnastics match.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Was she was a good wrestler for a gymnast, and then they turned him into a gymnast who happened to be a wrestler, and going up against Julia, where you're fighting for your life because she works a little snug, she had to be a wrestler again. I enjoyed this a lot.
I did too.
I enjoyed this.
This is a good match.
And I enjoyed on AEW, I enjoyed that Jamie Hayter Queen Aminata match because they gave Aminata her chops back. And Hayter and her had a stiff one for a while there, too. I mean, that was pretty damn fantastic.
I'll also give it up to Lola Vice and Ren Sinclair. I thought they had a pretty nice match.
Ren just dies for people, and it's fantastic. She just makes them look like $1 million. But not as good. Nothing of that was as good as the New Day, and this and their argument, caught on camera, where things they stopped being polite and started getting real, and somebody finally brought up the 6 seconds against Brock. I don't see. I kind of think next week that there's no breakup. I think they just back off again, and then at the Rumble is where somebody ends up eliminating the other, and that's where it explodes. I don't know if I want the New Day to break up necessarily, but I think bringing them back together is a bad idea, so I'm kind of stuck in the middle here.
Yeah, because the most obvious move is to turn Woods heel, step one. Step three, profit, and then step two is question marks.
Yes, the underpants gnome school of booking.
Yeah, I don't really understand where we're going to go with Woods, because Woods is kind of like an LA Knight type of person for me. A little more entertaining in the ring, but also not someone, especially in this babyface thing where it's like I want to see him have super long singles matches. His singles matches are nice.
Yes. They're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fine. And he does fine character work. And you know what? He actually knows characters pretty well because of his, you know, fandoms of, you know, all things pop culture.
That part he gets very well. And I think he could find a good heel character for himself. But I don't even think that heel character is going to be found in the confines of the New Day. He would have to use the New Day reunion as his origin story.
Like, if he was a manager wrestler for a heavy, like a Bronson Reed, even though Bronson doesn't need it. But I'm just saying a guy, you know, a big guy who could do his dirty work type of thing, and he's kind of manipulating him. That would be the best place for him, because there's no upside. I mean, you're not going to put the world title on Xavier Woods, even as a heel. You're not going to put the mid-card title on Xavier Woods. Like, it's almost like it has to be a tag team match where it's like the legacy of the New Day is on the line, and if Big E could, you know, stand on the apron for a while and just have Woods beat Kofi in some way, and that's how you get over it. But that's the ceiling for me for a Woods run. I just don't see anything else. Cause, you know, you could put him over in a singles match, but it becomes very much like that Ospreay-Fletcher type thing where it's like nobody wants to see Kofi lay down, but Kofi may lay down just to give him that chance, you know, politically,
right,
type of a thing.
But, like, you know, going to Ospreay and Fletcher, okay, that was a great match, but why push Kyle Fletcher? What are we doing? Like, what is the point?
I think Fletcher's looked great in this run, but the problem is Will Ospreay should be Dusty Rhodes in this company, and he's
right,
not.
Right. I thought somebody was fighting for AEW, bruv, and, like, I don't know who is at this point, but that gets back to the Death Riders existential crisis that wasn't.
Yeah.
What if there was an existential crisis and nobody cared?
Speaking of not caring, I guess I'll go unless you have something in the.
Yeah, go for it.
The worst angle in wrestling right now is, of course, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole and MJF and Roddy Strong.
No, I hate it. I hate it more and more every week.
This week, Kyle O'Reilly, a week after saying, I don't want, or, you know, something about you shouldn't have your friends do the fighting for you or something.
And then getting
effect.
Mad at Adam Cole at the pay-per-view for having his friends do the fighting for him and pushing him off.
Now he challenges MJF.
I hate it. I hate it,
oh,
Jeff. I hate
God,
it.
I hate
it stinks
this.
And I hate it. I hate it.
I don't like any of these guys. I don't think there's money in any of these guys. I think these guys are too small. I don't think any of them can talk other than Roddy. This is Ring of Honor member berries.
None of them carry any degree of urgency or drama. If their life depends on it. Story time with Adam Cole is not a good wraparound every promo opening line because it makes everything you say afterwards seem goofy. Once upon a time, there was an Adam Cole, and he was a very good Adam Cole, and he had a buddy, Roddy Strong, and he was a very strong Roddy. But then one day, Roddy wasn't so strong because he got hurt. I hate it. It's bad.
It comes out, I just go, oh, God, no.
And then you have Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, who do not get you to believe for a second that they're actually baby faces, even though, as best I can tell, this is their performance of completely convicted. They are trying. They are trying to act 100% earnest here in these scenes.
Well, here's the problem. You can't don't believe them as baby faces, and you don't care about them as heels. Because they're not really, they're goofballs. They're red shirts. They're hired goons for somebody. And you're just, it's like the Righteous. You know, nothing against the Righteous. But I don't expect them to be great. I expect them, they have a gimmick, and it's pretty cool. And then the bell rings. And then they're, you know, Vincent does great stuff, and then the heater comes in, and then Vincent comes back. But it's like that level of... They're not cutting promos that get me into the building, and they're not wrestling vicious enough for me to believe that they're killers. So I don't care about them.
Right.
I guess. I can't explain it any better. They're just vanilla to me. And I'm not saying they're midgets. I'm just saying they're vanilla. They're plain. They're dull.
They both don't have... I don't need them to have individual personalities. I need them to have a personality as a unit.
As a unit, yes.
Yes.
What is the point of the Undisputed Kingdom?
Right.
You know, we knew what the Horsemen was. They're to hold all the gold. They're the standard of excellence in professional wrestling. You know, any two of them can beat any two of anybody else. You know, there were all these things about them. The Undisputed Kingdom is, hey, remember Ring of Honor and NXT Black and Gold? Wasn't that great?
And then, yeah, NXT, Black and Gold, when we were the Undisputed Era, but we didn't have Mike Bennett or Matt Taven. We had Bobby Fish.
Would you rather have Matt Taven and Bobby, or Matt Taven and Mike Bennett or Bobby Fish right now? Here's your Sophie's Choice.
Yes. God, kill me with all these wonderful options you give me.
These Bobby Fish kind of brought some personality with the facials.
Yes, and I actually think Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly had more of a tag team
personality. Yes,
you know, yes, because Red Dragon had a flavor, and Bennett and Taven are just two guys.
Yes, I agree with that.
So I would absolutely have Fish and O'Reilly.
I give you the Lazy River as a sorbet. Do you have anything else? Cleanse your palate.
I'm trying to see, is there anything else that really spoke to me on this Dynamite show? We've hit all the notes.
Yeah.
I just continue to really struggle with what is the point of the meta narrative on this show, and everything feels really half baked. We have moved away from the Death Riders being this driving force to now the Hurt Syndicate being a driving force, and no real clear collision course between the Hurt Syndicate and the Death Riders, who seemingly would have antagony.
MVP is cutting babyface promos beforehand. I want a Continental Classic event center or something where guys are cutting 30-second promos about their match or why this tournament freaking matters to them at all. Why this belt matters when you have the international title and the TNT title and the Western States Heritage title or whatever titles we have in here. I get it. This is an end of the year tournament because people love tournaments and work rate and stuff like that. But at least, you know, cut some promos to make me know why people care about it. And I'm not getting that. I'm not getting off on it. It's just,
I want it dismantled next week by the Hurt Syndicate and the Death Riders.
It's
and
not going to be, it's not,
I know,
be, Chris.
I know. No, he doesn't have the nerve to, I know Khan loves his precious little tourney. He thinks people love it and he'll watch his ratings not do great as the tourney continues on and people won't really know what's going on. The stories won't really make sense because he hasn't really planned it out. This is not the G1. He is not Ghetto and Jetto planning this thing out months in advance. This is a thing that just got airdropped on us, and he doesn't even know where the hell it's going. He's gonna be sitting with a calculator calculating points in the back in the final weeks here. And that's also why he made it easier for himself with the 3-1 thing, too, so they wouldn't accidentally run into a 2-1 thing. So, again, if he had the nerve, if he was a more courageous booker, he would have the Death Riders and the Hurt Syndicate dismantle this thing next week and really set up a three-way power struggle between the AEW locker room, the Death Riders who want to destroy everything, and the Hurt Syndicate who want to own everything. And, like, that's the actual contours of this show going into 25.
Well, then let's go into Vader Club. It is late November. It is time for Thanksgiving, which means for me it's time for Starrcade. It's also very sad and bittersweet as it's also Survivor Series time, which means it is the 35th anniversary of the last time I got to see Tully Blanchard on national television before he went his separate ways, because it was actually, there was a Saturday Night Main Event tape for 2 weeks later that aired, but he was not in the Survivor Series that I purchased. No, he was replaced by one Bobby Heenan in the Heenan family. And it was revealed that he had previously failed a drug test because WWF wanted to screw him on his way out for not jobbing to the Ultimate Warrior in the build-up to Survivor Series. And also there were rumors that Tully Blanchard had been kind of recruiting backstage as well to help get people to jump back to Jim Crockett Promotions. But, again, Thanksgiving night, before there was a third football game, before anything, Thanksgiving was a wrestling night for some people. I can now understand in my old age why people would not like that. But it was Starrcade, and Starrcade 85, Tully Blanchard versus Magnum TA in an I Quit match. Now, I brought this up on the show many times, but I'm bringing it up this time for the build, which Chris does not have the pleasure of seeing, unless he went back and researched all that. I just gave him the match, so I doubt he did, but this is why the build is so important to me as well. Look, it's one of the greatest matches to me in history. I love it to death, but it hits on a different level for me than it will for Chris, and we're going to talk about that a little. On July 21st of 1985, Tully Blanchard defeated Magnum TA for the U.S. title at a matinee show from the Charlotte Coliseum with Baby Doll, dressed as security, handed Tully a roll of quarters, which got over huge in terms of heat for a matinee show. Tully Blanchard later cutting one of the most fantastic promos I'd ever seen in my life, where David Crockett asks him, "What about the roll of quarters?" And Tully responded, "David Crockett, the fans were so moved, they started throwing money into the ring." I'm in. August 13th, TV tapings, Magnum TA snuck down to the ring, dressed as a security guard and handcuffed Baby Doll to the bottom rope, then went into the ring and attacked Tully. Magnum said the idea was thought up on the ride to the arena. Magnum bought a pair of glasses and borrowed handcuffs from Doug Dillinger and said no one in the crowd had a clue it was him, and they lost their minds when they found out. True. Now, throughout all this, they're doing house shows back and forth, where Tully is escaping with his life, getting DQ'd. There's no Horsemen yet. We're still in the early rounds of the Andersons joining up with Flair, and they're teaming with Buddy Landell occasionally. They're teaming with Bob Roop occasionally. Whatever. Comes to a head when Magnum TA on the October 22nd episode of Worldwide Wrestling, he's cutting a promo. Baby Doll comes out to interrupt, leading to Magnum grabbing and kissing her. Some would call it sexual assault. As Tully Blanchard came out from the attack to close the show, Baby Doll smacks the crap out of Magnum. Tully sees this as a personal affront, and that brawl is hot and heavy. And the I Quit match has already been signed, but this is the last thing that they continue to replay on the few weeks going into Starrcade. And then we get to this match, which is less of a, what is it's, I don't want to see technical wrestling in a cage match. I don't want to see people trying to escape in a cage match. I want to see people feel like they're trapped by their circumstances and doing it. That's what this match does for me. It is a fight. Tully Blanchard famously gigs his arm in this one to get over how brutal the violence is. And in a rewatch, something I had forgotten, Tully Blanchard, because he is such a consummate pro wrestler, forgets that he's in an I Quit match and tries to cover Magnum TA.
Yeah, I'm watching the cover right now.
Yeah, I adored that spot. I don't care if it's a mistake or not. I don't think it was. I think it's something on purpose where he just, in story, forgets his surroundings. But yes, it ends with Baby Doll getting hoisted by her own petard, throwing a wooden chair into the ring. It eventually gets...
Because her first attempt to interfere does work. It's the second one that gets her.
Yes. And she is out there cheering on her man in a fight. Yes. And then eventually the worm turns and she gets scared to death. She is doing a phenomenal job of the emotional wave of a heel who was far too cocky coming into this. And now it's like, oh my God, my man might get killed here. Magnum, of course, drives the spike into the eye, getting a yes, but not an I quit, for which for the next 40 years, Tully Blanchard would live on promos and get heat yelling, I never quit, which is somewhat fantastic of a bit, given, but throughout the rest of his career in at least NWA, WCW, it was always reminding the fans of that so that they'd start chanting I quit and get on his nerves and whatnot. Magnum was only 3 years into his career here. Had a long way to go that was unfortunately cut short a little bit later. But when you think about 3 years in this, doing nightly shows up and down the roads with some of the best, including 60-minute matches against Flair.
Dude, he could work. He definitely could work. It's just that he couldn't talk, really.
His talking was more of the, I don't talk a lot, but I say what I mean. And it got over. And look, he was so good looking, he didn't need to talk, kind of. I mean, it's something that they fumbled with Lex Luger, because Lex Luger thought he could cut promos, and he always had an idea, and he was too left feet when it comes to that. But when you think about 3 years in the business now, where you're still kind of doing tumbling drills in NXT still, and Magnum's here doing this I Quit match for this, I mean, the learning curve was so much quicker back in the day. Magnum, the ultimate good guy who you never thought could get booed, and Tully, just such a natural asshole, if you read any of the trades about Tully. And it was kind of a lower grade Dusty Flair feud, with Magnum kind of being blue collar solid and Tully's father, of course, being a famous promoter. And, you know, him, Tully, as I like to call, was the department store Ric Flair. He liked to get his suits, but they didn't look custom made, but they looked off the expensive rack at least. Again, my favorite match ever. Just a brawl for the most part. A couple of wrestling moves, but using the cage as a weapon, always a big plus with me.
Hey, they're immersed. And this is, I think, what we were talking about earlier about what we like about cage matches. I'm glad you picked it for this week, just because I want some blood in a cage match, but I don't want it necessarily from weapons, or I want it from a very limited amount of weapons, limited usage of it. I want the idea that this match is just a little bit more brutal than a standard wrestling match because of the confines of the steel cage.
Yes. That's what was missing in this men's war games.
Absolutely.
Blood.
Absolutely.
Tell me Jacob Fatu isn't making you bleed? Tell me Bronson Reed, two monster heels, should be making the baby faces bleed and struggle. And I can't believe they didn't do that for that match.
And conversely, if you are going to shatter the Neo bloodline in this match, I think that's a great opportunity for these guys who have had these bulldog fronts for months to have a moment in time where they arrive at abject fear of the consequences of the steel cage or whatever predicament they have now found themselves in, and looking to Solo Sikoa, who sells them out. I just don't think that this War Games match really did a whole hell of a lot to advance the Bloodline, Neo Bloodline storyline. And we had kind of liked it going into this, but I felt like this match was a letdown in my final analysis.
Yeah, I almost picked the 92 War Games, but I didn't want to dwarf it with, you know, here's the standard of excellence. I would have if we hadn't watched the War Games, I think. Maybe if I could have gotten guaranteed on that, but we'll watch it sometime during this run, I think. But it's a different time, a different place. I do miss Thanksgiving night wrestling in some ways. I understand why it died out in many ways. It's a little much to ask your family to order a pay-per-view, but there used to be nothing to do on Thanksgiving night.
Mom and Dad, no, I feel like about 3 to 4 hours is plenty today. Do you mind if I watch wrestling? It is only $40. The year is 1988.
Can I have my friends come over and watch too? Well, it's Thanksgiving. Do you think their parents will, you know, all the little things about doing a holiday? And then WWF eventually moved Survivor Series to the night after Thanksgiving or the night before, and neither of those worked. Those started to die out, so they eventually just put it on the weekend, which is probably smart on their end. But it's a nice little time capsule. Thank you for indulging me on this Vader Club pick. Get your plugs in, Chris.
Well, you know, I was thinking for next week, I'll give my tease in. Ooh. I think I'm looking up someone named Fit Finlay. And ooh, I'm going to get me a Fit Finlay match in next week's Vader Club here.
Would you like a suggestion?
Sure. What are you thinking?
The William Regal parking lot brawl?
Yeah, I was like, brawl? I might do that. I'm going to go.
I'll let you pick the one that you want. I mean, there's plenty to pick from. I mean, his violence is great.
No, I know.
I am WCW Fit Finlay, though.
Me too. Me too. So I'm going to be looking for some WCW Fit Finlay sort of things. I'll be kind of going through his stuff this week and see if I can't curate something fun out of that. If you are interested in following me on Instagram, you can see as I am restoring a mid-1960s silver tone guitar found at a tag sale for $20. It's actually worth about $500, $600 if it was in better shape. But even the pickup alone is worth $200. I took it from being kind of junk status to it now just needs to have its actual tortoiseshell, like kind of custom pick guard that I'm making for it, cut out. And then once I cut that, this thing is ready to rock. Right now it has a temporary cardboard holder faceplate that says Creed Rules number one on there.
Apollo or the band?
The band.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So follow me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. Also, remember, go and listen to my music on Spotify. Nearly 5,000 of you did since the release, which garnered me a whopping 29 cents. The music industry is a vibrant place right now, and it's a great time to go and listen to Chris Novembrino's music on Spotify.
You can follow me at CrapGame13 on X. I am on Blueski at Jeff Hawkins. I just kind of copy and paste my tweets there occasionally. Don't know how long that'll last. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. All one word. We're part of the Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show on Wednesday nights called The Dynamite Show on Fight Game Media about 20 minutes after the show ends. Paul Fontaine of Figure 4/Wrestling Observer and myself go live on YouTube. That drops in your audio feeds for free the next morning if you choose to wait and hear our lovely voices. And other than that, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.